the Business Ethics Podcast, brought to you by the Business Ethics Alliance, exploring the ethical questions of today to create a more equitable tomorrow.
Well, welcome to the Business Ethics Podcast. I am Blake Peterson, and today I am joined by Dale Gubbles. Dale, thank you so much for being here today from First Star Fiber and also on the board of directors for the Business Ethics Alliance. So thank you for donating your time to the Alliance. I love the programming. How long have you been partnering with the Alliance?
Since its inception as well.
Since its inception. Yeah. Okay. So you are the OG Alliance member. You know, you've been here from the ground up. How long have you been on the board for? Have you been on the board since the beginning?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. You've really done a lot. I mean, I love the programming that the Alliance has put together, and obviously we have new faces and a lot of changes that have happened recently, but it's been good to see some of those same themes from the older programming stay true and continue. I think they're doing a great job.
Agreed.
With that. So
agreed.
How has that been? I know that, you know, the Alliance has obviously seen a lot of changes and whatnot, being on a board of directors and having so much change in the office. Has that been a difficult time for you? How has that been like?
Well, I think the difficulty, of course, like everyone else, and this is sounding like a broken record, just the pandemic and not having face-to-face when we were going through a lot of the changes made it even more difficult. So the fact that the organization and the people have stuck together in spite of that is pretty awe-inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely, because it would have been easy to quit.
Yeah,
exactly. Easy to break it apart.
Exactly.
Right? It's hard to keep going through times like that.
If we could have chosen the times for turnover of new leadership, we would have done it differently, but
yeah,
didn't give us that opportunity.
It's not the way it works. I think it's kind of important. I heard the other day someone talk about, you know, maybe you should step back and, you know, congratulate yourself for making it through the pandemic, and everybody, no matter what it is you went through, I just feel like we've been nonstop trying to going from, oh my gosh, if I go outside, I might die in March 2020, when we had no idea what was happening. And all the way through now, everything that's happened between that, it's easy to just think you have to just keep charging ahead and not focus, but should pat yourself on the back for making through it, especially if you're a business owner, business leader, or any of those people that had to make hard decisions. You know, take a second to say good job, because we may not be done with it yet, but it was a lot already.
No, I agree completely.
The last 2 years have been a lot, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Well, obviously, when you're not donating your time to the Alliance, you are the CEO of First Star Fiber.
Correct.
And so what do you do at First Star Fiber? You founded it 25 years ago, you just told me. So obviously, you've been there from the ground up. You founded the company. What was the mission when you founded First Star Fiber?
Well, I had been involved in recycling for many years prior to that, and actually was a consultant doing market development work for a variety of customers. And this opportunity to set up an in-state end market for the Nebraska was one of our missions. In fact, our initial plan was to build a paper mill. The Nebraska Recycling Association, which I used to run when we lived in the state, asked if I would be willing to put together a plan for building an in-state end market of some type. And one of the areas that it seemed at the time would be most beneficial to state would be to have a paper mill. So we did some research. We found an Italian company that claimed that it could build a paper mill for less than $10 million. That looked real promising, so we decided to form First Star Fiber with the idea that we would set up this paper mill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where fiber at the end of our name actually comes from. First Star comes from you wish on a star to get things started. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's all good.
Excuse me, can I?
Yeah, absolutely, go ahead.
Yeah, I can take this later. It's just,
no worries.
Sorry.
Hey, you're a busy guy, I understand.
So
that's it. So first, wish upon a star, and then how did you, were you partnering with the state initially to get this funded and get that paper mill?
In a sense, yes, because the Nebraska Environmental Trust had funded this study that we did, and they liked what they heard, and the director at the time suggested if we were serious about this that she would entertain our proposal to help fund it. So we did put in a proposal, and we were selected, and our plan became, we'll start with the recycling, we'll add a tissue converting operation, which means that we would send some of the paper to mills, they would pulp it, turn it into the rolls of tissue, they call them parent rolls. We would bring those back and unwind, rewind, cut them into individual rolls that you find in your restrooms.
No kidding. Wow.
And that went well for a number of years, but then, and we were developing along the way markets for creating the paper mill and hiring engineers. By the time we finished with our last engineering study, we found out that the vendor we had originally talked to was a little too optimistic. Mm. By the time you put all the bells and whistles that you need to run an environmentally sound and economically feasible, it was more like $90
million. Wow, from 10 to 90.
Yeah. Uh-oh. So that kind of changed our focus quite a bit.
I'm sure.
First Star became more focused on just recycling. And yet we've always had that plan in mind. And now, these many years later, we actually have plans for a plastic manufacturing component to our operation.
Wow. So we'll, then, did you actually start out and you were doing the tissue paper in the beginning? So then what was the machine that the Italian company that was going to make for you? Was that to create actually like sheets of paper, like for printing and copying? Or
no, the paper, once you have it collected, has to go somewhere to be pulped. Mm-hmm. Where you put it into sort of a big blender.
Oh, I see.
And the fiber separates, and you clean it, and then it gets laid out on a big sheet, the parent rolls that we were buying back from existing paper mills.
Okay.
And then it has to be cut into individual rolls.
Right.
And it was that middle piece that we were missing, and that we had hoped would be under $10 million to do, but that wasn't the case.
And so this would have been, so you could have done that in-house and
Correct.
Not sent it away to other paper mills.
Correct. We had been a fully integrated operation if we could have put all three components together.
And would you say that the machines that the paper mills were using in order to, pulp the paper, were those environmentally sound? So you think theirs met those qualifications?
They would. They just didn't have all the components like wastewater treatment and, with everything, there's always something that might have to be disposed of in a different way.
Right.
Paper isn't all tree fiber. It contains things like clay, ink, and other things. And all that would have had to been dealt with and hadn't been taken into account in our first go around. That plus it became clear that in order to be economical, you have to be at a certain size. And the mini mill concept is great in theory, but to make money at it, you have to have more to sell.
Right.
So that just kept increasing the size of everything that we needed to put in. Mm. And that's what ended up derailing our whole initial plan.
Right. Geez. So it's interesting, too, because you also have to kind of weigh out, you know, you're recycling the paper, which is obviously very needed and a good deed, but you're having to, you know, send this out to a third party service. So at least the place you're sending it to did have those good, you know, environmental issues covered on their paper mills. It sounds like that must be a standard almost, that paper mills just kind of make their machines that way.
Yeah, very much so.
So at least you weren't like sending it to like a factory that's a huge diesel engine just roaring in the background or whatever to get it running. But that's an interesting thing, because did the outsourcing of that paper, you know, was that really, is that really expensive for you all to do? Was it still cost effective for you to outsource the pulping of the paper and then put it into tissue? You're able to make money that way?
Yeah, it's definitely a business. You rely on existing operators. And unfortunately, Nebraska being a rural state, less population, there really hasn't been much in the way of development of in-state markets for our recyclables. Mm. Since then, there has been some gains in plastics, and there's been some gains in paper. There's a cellulose insulation company in Norfolk area that turns newspaper and other paper into the insulation used in attics that blow it in.
Oh, yeah.
To make your house warmer or cooler.
Sure.
So there are growing entrepreneurs here in the state who are doing a lot of things, and we look to be doing it with plastics now, which is one of the areas that there's more and more plastics, as we all know, going into our recycling carts, hopefully, or into our trash mm-hmm. carts if we haven't gotten smarter about it.
Right. That's very true. And the packaging is just, there's so much plastic in our packaging for food and whatnot. It's just wild. I mean, I think that at my house, we fill up our recycling is full way before our trash is. And it, with the recycling being picked up every other week, sometimes I'm like, right now I have boxes I've stored off to the side that I had to throw in the recycling last night because they couldn't fit in it for yesterday. So that's kind of a, and I don't even know, I'm probably doing too much. I'm probably putting some things in there that don't even belong sometimes. You know, I know that we try to be really good about that, but it's hard to know sometimes what can and cannot go into the recycling, and I feel guilty putting it in the trash, so I'd rather risk it. What happens to that stuff that I put in the recycling that's not supposed to be there? I mean, you all have to sort it out, right, I'm sure, and send it to the landfill? Or
unfortunately, yes. There's less and less of that, and actually what we're looking to do will hopefully mitigate the need to landfill things like potato chip bags, candy wrappers. All those things currently cannot be recovered effectively. However, we saw a pilot program that Dow Chemical did out in California back in 2015 that really intrigued us. It was based on having the residents put those types of non-recyclable plastics into a purple bag. They would tie it off and they'd set it out with their recyclables. The recycling center would pull those out, and Dow made it possible then to send it to a pyrolysis system where they turned it back into fuel. Like a diesel, they would.
Wow.
But that was a long way from the residents, and they only did it for 3 months. But we felt, well, that could handle what we considered the wishful recycler. Like if you're throwing it in,
right,
hoping that it can be recycled,
right,
we can appreciate everyone's interest and willingness to try to conserve resources. However, what we felt could be a solid way of doing it, you have to first have a way to make it not only convenient for the residents, but it has to be convenient and possible for the end markets, or rather the processor, which is us. So I reached out to ConAgra Foods sustainability person at the time, asked them if they were aware of that program that Dow had done, and as it turned out, their vice president of sustainability at the time was a good friend of the gentleman who started that program. And she said, would you like to meet with Jeff? And I said, sure. She said, well, you're in luck. He's a Nebraskan, and he's coming back to visit his parents.
That's awesome.
So we met, and long story short, we then became the first recycling center to permanently offer the Hefty Energy Bag program that still goes on today. Residents buy bags, the Hefty Energy Bag, from local stores. They put in all those things that we otherwise don't want in our recycling stream. But if it goes into the bag, they tie it off, they put it in there, out with their other recyclables, makes it easy for us to pull it all out, and we will be converting that into the feedstock to make plastic lumber, pallets, and we're talking to another company about how they might use it to make lightweight aggregate for lightweighting concrete.
Wow, that's wild. So it does kind of make sense that you could go from something like creating a diesel fuel and you know, put it into, you know, something stronger, more firm, because really it's amazing how much oil is in this room right now as we sit here, and just what petroleum is in every single thing almost that has been created here. It's wild how much goes into it. If you could replace that with something like this, I mean, that sounds incredible. So the Hefty Energy Bag program, I do remember that the Alliance had an event on that I came to and heard you speak on. And can you walk me through a little bit of, you know, if you're the first people in the country that have adopted this, what is it going to take to get this on a massive scale? I mean, Hefty, which is a household name, are they owned by Dow Chemical? Is that how this?
No, they're actually owned by Reynolds.
Oh, so okay.
It was a collaboration between Dow and Reynolds.
Another huge, huge company everyone's heard of. So how were you able to get them to create this, you know, energy bag system for just Nebraska?
Well, it isn't just for Nebraska. We were the first. They had started this, as I said, in California. However, it was taking a while to convince recycling operations like ours to get excited about it, because we're in business to make money.
Right.
And unless they could figure out how to incentivize us, it wouldn't work. What, to answer your question, how they have expanded. They're now in Atlanta, Georgia. They're also in Boise, Idaho. The Southeast is probably going to expand more rapidly than anywhere else, because there's several types of businesses now that are using that material. We're looking to be the first right here in the Midwest to use it, so we're hopeful, and as is Reynolds and as is Dow, that we will be providing a market for the material. And that is the basic answer to your question, how will it expand? You just can't recycle by setting it out at the curb. Unless it goes into another product or into some useful end use, it's not a feasible or sustainable approach. So that's why we've received support and financing from a group called the Alliance to End Plastic Waste. And as their name implies, that's what their mission is. It's made up of Dow, Enron, not Enron, excuse me.
I was going to say, dang, have we been looking
I knew
into
we
these
would
guys?
Be talking about that. Exxon.
Yes.
And other petroleum companies with the idea that if they could help entrepreneurs like First Star Fiber get involved in something, that will help solve that problem.
You know, it's interesting, too, the push that has been kind of thrust upon these energy companies to move towards a more green opportunity. And I think that, so if I remember correctly, is it Exxon or it's Halliburton? One of them are kind of having had a almost a takeover by the board that came on and said, hey, listen, you need to start thinking about your renewable energies because that's the way of the future. And we want you to be profitable, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now, not just today. And we need to start gearing up for that change.
Well, absolutely. And actually, I've been at this for almost 40 years now, starting out years ago working for the state of Nebraska as their public information officer. And one of my first areas was to promote recycling. Mm-hmm. And that's about all we were doing at the time because it was in its infancy.
Right.
But what has really changed is exactly what you're referring to there. The public, you know, the first Earth Day, I believe, was in 1970.
Right.
It's grown every year since. There's all this interest. The general public understands that we've got to do more for our environment, and that means being more active as consumers, being more active as owners of shares within these companies, mm-hmm. Getting more active in government, all that.
Yeah.
It really starts with the individual and works its way up.
Yeah, and who you elect and why. I mean, that all kind of helps push what direction we're going to move in. And it seems like Nebraska and Nebraskans overall are pretty pro-recycling. I think there's quite a bit of an effort here. And having recycling be available is a huge piece. Where I grew up in Payton, Colorado, you couldn't get recycling if you wanted to. Payton, Colorado, it might as well be pick any small town in Nebraska. That's about what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could not recycle if you wanted to. And then in Denver, where I lived, you know, you're pretty much at the will of whether or not your tenant where you rent from has recycling in back. And we would look for who has recycling on the street, and that's who we'd walk up and throw it into.
Sure.
But it was very limited. And I've lived in places where it was not even available. In Denver, Colorado, which you would imagine that should be a very pro-recycling, there should be recycling containers on every street corner with all the money that they have, and it's really not there yet, which is surprising.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so it's a good cultural thing I think we have in Nebraska to be pushing that forward. So obviously you're making this new material out of these energy bags, which is crazy. Candy wrappers turned into essentially decking and things of that sort. Is that
correct?
What you're making out of it?
Yeah.
And it's very, very strong. So how is that going? Are people being receptive to it? Is that selling well? Where are you selling it?
Well, we're not in operation yet, but we're very close. We've got 95% of the different equipment that is needed to turn those materials into the feedstock that'll go into the plastic lumber. Mm. We look to have that operational by May at the latest. And the equipment to make the plastic lumber is already made. It's sitting in Canada. We'll be shipping it down to Nebraska here shortly. And our timeline is to start producing lumber with this as early as July, August.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's coming up. You must be busy right now.
We've been real busy.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So what do you think about, because obviously you're pioneering almost a new part of this industry, even though there's other people who do it, right? It's all in its infancy. So what are some of the considerations that you have put in the forefront when you're developing this? I mean, I imagine you have to have an equation where it's like, so how much energy are we using in order to make this fiber? Are we actually recycling something? Are we putting just as much energy wasted as we are, you know, creating this new product? How do you balance those things, and what do you think about when making that?
Well, that's a very good point, because it doesn't make any sense to put your resources into something where it's just a net loss.
Mm-hmm.
So we did research the businesses that we're talking to, the plastic lumber, for example. We worked with the company outside of Toronto. Actually, Dow introduced us to them some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent about a year and a half just talking to them. We helped them set up an energy bag program in London, Ontario.
Wow.
So that they could test whether or not this actually worked in their equipment. They had been making plastic lumber using more homogeneous type of material. You know, every time a product is made, say a package or even a chair, or there's always scrap that comes off of that. Mm-hmm. We call that post-industrial scrap, which is usually cleaner. It hasn't gone through the typical waste stream. It's been segregated right from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. That's what they had been using. So to convince them to try using post-consumer recyclables, and especially ones that had never been recyclable, mm-hmm. It took a bit. But thankfully, the gentleman who owns that company, he also had a desire to do more to solve the world's problem with plastics. So he was very keen on trying this out, and he produced some very attractive boards. We actually bought the first load of it, and we've been showing that around to various actual high school shop teachers.
Yeah,
because we think this would be a great thing for students to learn how to use plastic for making a variety of products, chairs, you name it.
Right.
And there's a lot of interest there. And so building the idea that if you find a useful outlet for it, it's going to have value, correct?
Right.
And that is one of the measurements as we answer your question about how do you make that decision. If there's a market for it, and people are willing to pay enough to cover your labor and your technology and your energy, then you're on the right path.
Right. And you have to, I mean, at the core of this and the core of all these companies, it seems like there's people who have very kind hearts and are all very much focused on, like you said, it, solving a problem of plastics in the environment. You know, that's at the root of it. But you also are running a business. And if you just do what makes your heart feel good all the time, that business is going to end, and you might not be able to keep on doing this, the very important work that you are. So you have to make those tough decisions. Have you had any times where, you know, you, well, obviously maybe the paper mill was an example of the first one, but where you had aspirations to really step up and change the market or really bring something else to the forefront of recycling, but it just didn't make sense from a business standpoint, so you had to step away? Is that a common thing?
It is. In fact, prior to any of this coming about, we were looking with another Canadian firm to put in a system to take some material that also is post-industrial, a film that the many of the meatpacking plants will produce a plastic bag.
Oh, right.
And this firm in Canada was working with farmers, and at the time, the Canadian farmers were a lot farther along using ag film, where they were actually storing their corn and other grains in bags, but they were a single use. This company was turning it into a wax that is used for making roofing tiles and other things. And that seemed real promising, but by the time we've visited them, we started putting together the numbers, we realized they needed those materials to be quite clean. Mm-hmm. So that required another process, which was to wash it, dry it, pelletize it. Mm-hmm. And by the time you did all that and add the cleaning of the water, we were back to square one like we were with the paper mill again.
So it's almost right now the aspirations are a little bit ahead of the technology that's available for it. Would you say that is
the case? Yes, that's changing pretty rapidly, though. I've been amazed just in the last 2 years. We're starting to get calls now from businesses that prior to some of the rising cost and value of plastics, they're looking for lower cost feedstocks. And the feedstock, of course, is what is used in making a variety of things, but they're now becoming more creative. Actually, one packaging plastic engineer told me, you know, the packaging that we have does a lot of things. It, you know, a hot dog, for example, you have to have packaging that will keep it safe so the air doesn't get in, keeps the sunlight out. He said, so it took us 50 years to really develop all this. And now we're being asked to develop this in a way that it can be used for other things at the end of its useful life. And we're struggling to get there as quickly as possible.
Right.
And that is amazing, actually, how much work has gone into recycling plastics.
Yeah, and the push from companies and from people, you know, you hear the horror stories of the companies in the past who really just put profitability above care for the environment. It's been, that was a theme, I feel like, for a long time. And maybe life was harder then, and you just didn't really think about it as much. I don't know. I mean, they didn't know as much either.
Well, I think it wasn't that they were necessarily greedy as much as they were just ignorant.
Sure.
And, you know, as I said, it's amazing you stop and think that it took a bunch of birds dying off. You know, Silent Spring was one of the emphasis of the first Earth Day.
Right.
Well, you know, the U.S. had come out of World War II, had all these GIs returning home. They were tired of war, obviously, and they wanted to return to their families, and this country just went on almost a rampage, if you will, to build up the infrastructure here to give people jobs. And, you know, humans, as a species, we've got a lot going for us.
Yes.
But we can be pretty short-sighted at times.
That's fair.
And, you know, it's just taken us a little while to get to the point where we recognize that our environment is where we live. Doesn't matter if we're in a room. Doesn't matter if we're out in the parking lot. It's still the environment.
That's true.
And making those connections to everything we do in our daily lives is going to impact Brazil, is going to impact the entire world in some way.
Yeah.
It's taken us a while to get that through our thick skulls.
Absolutely. And it's crazy to think how fast, like you said, technology is moving right now. And the human race as a species, for so long, it was just such slow evolution of technology. We were just creeping ahead and creeping ahead, and then all of a sudden it's like we're in a rocket ship blasting off, and our simple human minds, which just happen to be the most amazing technology on the planet, are trying to catch up to it. You know, and it's people think that, you know, social media and things like that are the most impressive part of it, but really it's all these other pieces that have allowed us life to be so easy that we now have social media. You know, those GIs coming home from World War II, they didn't have time to think about if they would like your picture of what you ate after dinner, right? Because they were in war. They're trying to survive. They're trying to create a country. Now we have this huge, everything built up around us and so much opportunity, and we're trying to almost catch up to where we're at right now while we're still speeding forward at light speed. And especially in recycling, it seems like. It's just going crazy.
Well, exactly. And, you know, one of the other areas, and I'm pretty passionate about this, I grew up on a farm, and our problems stem also from, you know, we were single-minded. We had to feed the world, not taking into account that our soils feed us, and if we don't feed the soils,
right,
they're not going to feed us forever.
We'll have a dust bowl.
Exactly.
Again, right?
Exactly.
Gosh, that's crazy. And that's another part, you know, farming and the meat processing. I know that's been under a lot of attack from environmentalists as well, and for good reason. But at some point, I do step back and I think, what's more important? Is it feeding these hundreds of millions of people who rely on this meat and food and vegetables, everything, to be in the grocery store, or to make sure that every single one of those processes is 100% pain-free, so to speak? It's a tough question to answer.
Yeah, and you know, having grown up on a farm, I'm not a vegetarian,
right?
But I do try to eat sensibly about, and also take into account, when I'm eating a steak or hamburger even, I do take time to recognize, you know, this came from an animal.
Right.
And I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I recently started watching Netflix documentary called Sacred Cow.
Okay.
And I highly recommend that, as well as there's another one called Kiss the Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how we could do quite a bit to reduce our concerns about climate change if we just resort back to taking care of the soil, because much of the carbon that we could keep out of the atmosphere could go right back to the soil, building up a better structure to raise crops, as well as to benefit wildlife.
Right.
And going back to times when that's how farming was done for a long time.
Yeah. Of course, and it's almost, it all has to come full circle as well. You know, we're focusing on certain pieces of the environmental aspect, and a big part is the trash we throw away. I mean, that is massive issue that you obviously are trying to solve, and so many other people around the world are. But it is in every single thing that we do. Everything has a little bit added to those environmental effects. And so going all the way back to how the plastic or how the food was even produced in the first place, and making sure that's environmentally sound, and then how you transport the food, how you package it, and then how you deal with that packaging after you consume the food. It's a lot, and you got to get a lot of people on board in order to make that process be, you know, harm-free to the environment and to the people, and also cost-effective and profitable for the businesses.
Absolutely, and one of the big ironies, quite honestly, is you mentioned, you know, humans have developed a brain that has all this capability, but there's so many lessons that we could learn from nature.
Yeah.
Is there anything in nature that actually is a waste?
Yeah, no kidding. Not really. Not that I can think of, right? Everything has a purpose.
Exactly. And that's how we try to view things that we receive at our recycling place, but we're not there yet because, I try to define it, waste, as resources just waiting for alternative sensible thinking to emerge.
Wow, that's great. I like that quote. Absolutely. And it is that. Maybe not at this point in time because the technology hasn't caught up to it, but it can be a resource. All of these little things, from a candy wrapper to, what about styrofoam? So where are we at with that? Because I always know that styrofoam, it doesn't degrade. I hear it's really bad for landfills. Are people recycling that? Is that technology here?
They're actually, it's very recyclable.
Oh, okay.
The challenges with styrofoam is that it's lightweight, and it was lightweighted for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because that actually has some energy savings involved in it. It's also a good material for insulation, so it's used for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But Omaha is home to a couple of companies that use and make styrofoam type products, and they have started to develop ways to recycle it as well. And we work with some companies that get a lot of it. There's technology where it's basically squeezing out the air, if you will, because it's right. That's what gives us its lightweightness.
Yeah.
And then it can be recycled back into everything from picture frames to roofing.
Wow.
And there's a lot of uses for it. The challenge has been if you just throw it into your recycling cart, it gets crunched and breaks up. It's very friable.
Right.
And once it gets into small pieces, there's no way we can get it out.
I see.
That's why we encourage people, if you're out and you get a fast food container, mm-hmm. at least put it into your energy bag.
Right.
Because we can recycle that into plastic lumber, into these other things as well.
So then but not a styrofoam cup.
Yeah.
In the energy bag. You could.
Yeah.
Put that in the hefty energy bag.
Correct.
What about like if you buy the steak at the store, comes in that, you can put that styrofoam in there as well,
as long as it's clean, because
right.
And this is something that I really stress, we use a lot of our company is made up of individuals, workers, so whatever you put in that bin, stop and think about, would you want to pick this up?
Right.
And you know, if we recognize that if waste our resources, so are humans.
Right.
And one of the big things that have always encouraged me about recycling is it touches on everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it touches on ecology, obviously, but it also touches on economics, and it also touches on just human kindness.
Right.
And just social good.
Yeah, absolutely. It really does. And it's one of those things that has become more socially acceptable by everyone in recent years. Not that people were like, don't recycle, it's a bad thing, but just it's almost that people realize the need for it has become you know, much more apparent. And so individuals who maybe thought it was not worthwhile in the past because they didn't understand what their recycling was going to, now they can see, well, your recycling is going to making lumber now, to building decks, to building chairs, to making picture frames. I mean, there's so much that this recycling is being made into. If you would open up your eyes and maybe read it or do some research into it, you would find those things out. But that education might not be there.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, we have a saying in the industry, recycle. The job you create may be your own.
Yeah, definitely. That's true. And with where do you see this industry going? So, of course, you know, you're doing a lot right now, and you're making huge strides in what you can recycle and what you can put it into. But do you see the recycling industry itself, you know, really taking off and being almost like a growth type of industry because of the movement going towards it? Or do you think it's still always going to be kind of an industrial piece? You just kind of have to keep plugging away on, because I don't know that we're necessarily in a position to move away from fossil fuels anytime soon. I know that there's a lot of analysts out there who see us using more fossil fuels 40 years from now than we are today.
Mm.
And that maybe be a painful thing to admit or to think about. I always thought that we'd be using less and less fossil fuels almost every year as the technology comes out and as things, but really just because there's Teslas available, how much of an impact does having those Teslas on the road make when there's so many people and only a select few can afford those? First of all, I mean, I don't have a garage, so I can't plug in an electric car, right? If you don't have a garage, you kind of can't. So there's a lot of these cool pieces that are out there, but it might not be the big splash that, you know, we'd hoped for. So is it just a slow crawl and we just have to keep on marching, or do you really see the recycling industry in a position where it's about to go leaps and bounds in growth?
Well, yes, but you raised several points there, and I'll start with, it's already reached bounds that I didn't believe that it could when I started out in this business years ago. It's a billion-dollar industry,
right.
And is growing all the time. And I use the word growing in a slightly different approach. Remember I said that we could learn a lot from nature?
Yep.
There is no such thing in nature as unlimited growth.
Very true.
But we believe, as humans, that, yeah, we believe in unlimited growth.
Yeah.
Well, what happens in nature, though, is more maturity.
Right.
And I think we become less sustainable if we don't recognize the fact that, yeah, growth has its limitations, but yet all of us want to grow up to be adults. Mm-hmm. But when we say we want to grow up to be adults, we also want to grow up to be more mature.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that all businesses need to stop and reflect on as they set their budgets and as they set their visions for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what does maturity mean? Well, I believe actually some of our founding fathers and mothers, because they weren't doing it on their own, trust
right.
me.
Absolutely.
Came up with the idea the liberty is the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
And if we can make our businesses more in line with being mature adults, treating our workers like, hey, these are people who deserve to be safe and pursue their visions for their families.
Mm-hmm.
Recycling is all part of that.
Right.
So I think the opportunities for recycling and just betterment of society in general is there, and it's going to take, you know, do we have all the answers? No, I'm afraid not.
Right.
But if we all share the same goal that we're all going to become a little more mature about things.
Yeah.
And really study what that means. I was speaking to a gentleman who's running for state senator, mm-hmm. and he said, you know, one word that we don't seem to value as much, and it's ironic that we don't, we need to prosper.
Right.
And that takes in more than just, oh, we got to grow, because grow, what, more crime?
You can grow in a lot of ways.
More prisons.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? Some people would probably like that. Some people would probably look for, you know, and that's the, but I think it's the minority.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and I think that it's always been the minority. It's just that those are the people who might be the loudest, or those are the people who might be the ones that speak up, and so it seems as though there's a lot more people like that. But what you said about maturing as a business is so interesting, and it's so powerful, because, you know, I'm looking for companies that are crazy growth all the time, right? I mean, I'm in financials, so mm-hmm. what do you think I'm excited for? You know, that's what I want to find. But at the same token, I see there's a limit almost for some of these companies that you almost can see with Facebook. They were just on a tear. I mean, there's a direction on their chart was just straight up as far as what they've been pushing and how much they've been growing and all these new things they've been able to do and how profitable they've been able to come. And then you see how quickly the rug gets pulled out from underneath them when Apple decides that we're not going to let you do as much tracking as you have been doing across these platforms. And you see their stock start to plummet. You see it start to hurt, you know. And I'm not talking anything bad about Facebook, but they were growing at such a massive clip. That was a problem that they didn't address. They just didn't ever see going away. You know, they didn't ever think about what are we going to do when this happens. Instead, it just got thrust upon them. And now they're, I'm sure that there's been some tough conversations in that office and how they're going to get through it. So if you're able to maybe pull back and say, what do? We do it well? Yes or no? Maybe that's where we should start with the questions. Then who's important? Well, our employees are, maybe above our shareholders, you'd want to think, because if you value the shareholders before you value your employees, there might not be a business for the shareholders to invest in one day, because your employees are going to be gone. They might hate it. They might be looking for an excuse to sue you. All those different things. So maturing as a business might be stepping back and saying, hey, right now isn't the time to bring this new recyclable product to market, even though we want to really badly. We need to just take a step back and do what we do well and try to find a way to do it more affordably so we can keep the lights on, keep these people employed, and keep on doing our mission, which is making the world a better place through recycling, or making the world a better place through a communication website that people can, you know, talk with all around the world. Whatever it is you do, but maturing as a business is a rare, I don't know if I've ever heard that, to be honest with you, out of anyone's mouth. So it's interesting you say that. Thank you for that little piece, because that's definitely something that more people should talk about. Do you think that you have an advantage because, you know, so First Star Fiber, your private company, correct, and ownership and whatnot, do you think that that is a big advantage for you when you make these business decisions, that you don't have those outward pressures? Have you ever thought about trying to be, you know, a publicly traded company or things like that, and what it would bring?
Some of my early board members worked for publicly traded companies, and some of their advice, not that I would have considered it anyway, was don't ever become a publicly traded company.
Yes.
What we are trying to do is actually become more of a privately broad company. We last year formed an employee stock ownership program, or ESOP.
Oh, that's great.
With the idea that I want our workers to feel, and more than feel, to be part of whatever we gain, that they gain from it as well.
Yeah.
I've been reading a book called The Great Game of Business, and it talks about how the best business practice is to make sure that everyone in your company knows that they have a stake in how it turns out. And it recommends, or the authors recommend, forming ESOPs so that, you know, everyone eventually becomes a stakeholder. So when you say, you know, take care of your stakeholders, you're taking care of your employees as well.
Right.
And it goes along with, years ago when I worked for the state environmental agency, I used to do environmental education workshops. And one of the things that I learned at one of those early training for myself was that none of us is as smart as all of us.
Right.
And that is how a business should run as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know everything how to my company works, quite honestly.
Right.
And lo and behold, I would probably be chased away from a forklift by my employees if they saw me trying to get on one.
Right.
But I need that driver of that forklift to feel like, hey, what I bring to this company is just as valuable as that guy sitting in his office.
Yeah.
And we'll be a better company because of that.
Absolutely. I agree that the ownership, I've been an employee in a place where you're just a body, that you're filling a spot, and they're just a paycheck as well. And I can't wait to get out of there, and I can't wait to level up. You know, that is a thought in a lot of employees' minds. And I see, even in the fast food industry, I can see a huge change. Like when Chick-fil-A came onto the scene and they're like, we're going to pay people better, we're going to offer benefits, we're going to be closed on Sundays, because nobody likes working on Sundays. Okay, it's just, unless maybe you're a football player and you can't wait to collect that few $100,000 check, it's not fun to work on a Sunday, right? So those little things matter to an employee. It's the little things that really do matter when you're an employee. If you just feel cared for, a lot of times you'll turn down the more money to go someplace else because you like where you work, you like the people you work with, and you feel valued. More and more employers are starting to realize that's non-negotiable anymore.
Right.
Right.
And that's all part of maturing.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe we are maturing a little bit. We just aren't taking time to pat ourselves on the back and realize it. Instead, we think this is all a part of growth, but maybe it is maturing.
Yeah.
We can take a second to look at it in more detail. But That is incredible. So what can you tell people? We're kind of reaching. I've already been keeping you hostage here for about an hour. So for people that want to be better about their recycling practices, for people who want to be more involved with it or whatever it may be, what's the best piece of advice you can give to them out there?
Well, you know, as I said, I believe all waste are resources. We just have to become smarter about, are they ready to be, and is there a whole system to make them reusable again? So I guess a simple answer to that question is, at least take the time to go to the website, our website, firststarrecycling.com, and you can see on our website we've got what can go into the energy bag, what can be recyclable, and even if you decide, well, I'm not going to go buy the energy bag, you know, it's perfectly fine. Just acquaint yourself with what is not recyclable then, and just don't throw it into the recycling stream.
Yeah.
Because when people throw, for example, their plastic grocery bags in, one, they can go back to the grocery store, and they're made back into, some of them are made back into plastic lumber, some of them are actually being made back into plastic bags again.
Wow, okay.
But it takes an extra step to do that.
Right.
But nevertheless, it goes along with the idea that if you throw them into your recycling stream, it becomes a safety hazard for my employees.
Right.
Because they'll wrap around equipment, and then we have to equip our employees with actual knives to cut it off. And
right.
It just is worrisome and painful as I think about how easy it would be for someone to get hurt.
Oh, you know, one of my old jobs, we're not allowed to carry a knife with us. It was not allowed at all for many reasons. I did. One day, I was like, I'm going to carry this knife with me because I had something to cut up. I cut my finger that one day that I did it. And of course, I didn't report it because I didn't want to lose my job. But I thought, yeah, trust me. So I'm with you. That was my one time carrying a knife at work. So safety. Keep your employees safe, right? So
exactly.
Putting that in. Now, firststarfiber.com, recycling.com is going to be in the notes about this podcast. So you can go there to click on it. Is there anywhere else you want people to know about to visit for First Star Fiber or any of the Hefty Energy Bag programs?
Well, there's a website just for the Hefty Energy Bag program. But just in a broader sense, I would also encourage people to become familiar with conservation voters, because there's a lot of things that we can do on the state level to have our elected officials become more aware of these things. And the Nebraska Conservation Voters, I'm the current chairman of the organization. I'd like to see more people get involved on a political level as well, rather than just on a personal level.
Absolutely. We have to. Local government matters so much. I think it matters more than federal, because I can't change anything about federal. Those people are going to do what they want to do. But locally, we can make an impact. And so that is super, super important. I'll have the links to all of that in the information about this podcast. But Dale, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And good luck as you all start to launch your next version of the Energy Bag program, and you keep on starting to innovate the recycling world in Nebraska. It's awesome, and thank you for what you do with the Alliance, my friend. It was great talking to you.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate our time together.
Anytime.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Business Ethics Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Business Ethics Podcast.